RTI Digital Series, Trey Wallace here, special edition. Happy to be joined by University of Tennessee tight end Austin Pope. Austin, what's up, buddy? How are you?
I'm good. How are you doing?
I'm good, man. So how have things been going, you know, personal life? Everything going pretty well for you?
Yes, sir. Everything's going pretty well for the most part.
That's good. That's good. Well, I'm happy that you got to join us tonight and kind of discuss. There's a reason why we are talking tonight, and we'll get to that here in just a little bit. But, you know, I kind of want to start things off, Austin, and, you know, you being a Knoxville kid, you know, I still say kid because, man, everybody grows up so fast, but you being from Knoxville area and, you know, playing at Tennessee, you know, what was that like coming out of high school and being able to make that decision to play for your hometown team?
I mean, it was a dream come true. I grew up here. I watched Tennessee football from when I was little. I'm from Sevier County originally. But just growing up in this area, it's kind of all you know. So getting into high school, eventually just choosing football as my main sport, was getting some interest and got recruited by a bunch of different schools. But I mean, Tennessee was always in the back of my head. They actually weren't even one of the first schools to offer me. They came in a little later, I guess. I don't know why, but I guess I was a local kid, so it has something to do with that. But I wanted that offer more than anything, you know. I needed that Tennessee offer to almost solidify that. Like coming out of high school, you watch the 3:30 SEC games, and you hear the music in the background, and you want to play on those, you know, playing those games on those days, you know. You want to play against Florida and Georgia, and I wanted to play for Tennessee. And also, some people know, I don't know how many, but I mean, it's on my social media. I don't hide it. I lost my dad to brain cancer my junior year of high school. So staying local for me and being close to my mom to where she wouldn't have to travel and I could go see her on the weekend and my family, that was also really important to me. So that was a big factor in why I chose Tennessee.
And, you know, what was that like for you? You know, I'm not in a sense of being able to stay home. You know, you talked about wanting that offer and, you know, it came kind of late in the process, I guess you could say, but you know, you kind of talked about it, you know, hearing the CBS theme song in the background and picturing yourself at Tennessee. But, you know, what was that like coming out of high school and trying to earn that, you know, that offer from then? It was the Butch Jones staff.
Right. Yeah, I was hungry. Like I said earlier, I wanted that offer probably more than any of them. I started out, you know, like my first offer was, I think, like Army or Navy or somebody. And then it happened because my dad was like having so many health issues in the summer going into my junior year, or the summer going into my sophomore year, I guess it was, or after my sophomore year, I'm not sure. But whenever, you know, you hit the camp track and you go to different camps and schools and try to prove yourself. And I didn't have that opportunity because like I was dealing with my father earlier, like I said, but then I finally got the chance to go to Tennessee, and it was literally like after I got a little bit of interest from a couple schools, I was on Tennessee's radar, and then pretty much from there, it was like, hey, come to camp. Like, we really don't want to see you do too much. We just want to see you in person, you know, talk to you, see the type of guy you are. And then I went to camps. Just like, I remember I went to Arkansas. At that time, Brett Bielema was the head coach. Okay. I showed up there and I'm putting on my cleats and getting ready to lace them up and get everything rolling for the day, do all the drills and everything. He comes up to me. He's like, hey, man, we just wanted to see you in person and like have you out here at the campus. We're like, we don't even need you to do anything today, you know? And then I got that offer. And then it was like Tennessee. It was like Missouri was next. And then Tennessee offered like once the SEC started too. And then I came to Tennessee, did a little bit of the camp and did really well. And at that time, I guess it was Coach Elder was the tight end coach way back when. But I just fell in love with the place, you know. I mean, the place speaks for itself. Neyland Stadium does. The fan base is nuts. And at the time, I loved Butch Jones because he was recruiting me, you know. But I don't know. It was just like I needed that offer to prove to myself that I was who I said I was, you know.
It's a great way to put it. And it's also, you know, I can kind of hear it, you know, it's proven to a lot of people as well, you know, that you deserve to play at Tennessee, I guess is the best way to put it, right? I
mean, right, because you got the naysayers out there, and because I'm a local kid, you know, playing against East Tennessee football, which, I mean, it's not the greatest, don't get me wrong, but, I mean, it's compared to Texas and Georgia and California, all these other places. But the amount of talent that's slept on in this state, and especially this area, I think is kind of disrespectful. I mean, just like you, like I was looking on Twitter yesterday, and Amari Rodgers playing for the Packers, you know what I'm saying? Like, Amari's younger than me, went to Clemson, had a great career, but Amari played at Catholic, just another local kid that got an opportunity, you know? So I don't know. Like, I think it doesn't make any sense, because the overall, like, competition isn't that great in the area, don't get me wrong, but there's a lot of guys that can play a lot of different positions at a lot of really good schools.
Hey, I think you see that. I mean, I've known about this area. I moved here personally, you know, 4 years ago, but I've been coming up here for a long time, and, you know, and I lived in Nashville. So you'd hear about East Tennessee products, and a lot of those kids, you know, would go to the mid-state or go out of state too.
Right.
You know, you look at the kids that would come out of Maryville or Alcoa, you know, T. Higgins kind of comes to my mind too. Amari Rodgers, you know, does as well. And I could go on, but, you know, I get what you're talking about when it comes to, you know, wanting to solidify your place in the high school recruiting, you know, department, I guess you could say, by getting that Tennessee offer. And I guess it kind of transitions to my next question. You know, you come in under one staff that recruits you, and things go wrong. You know, it's college football. It's life. And so a different staff comes in. It's a transition for you. What was that first transition like? Because, you know, coming in thinking you're going to be a part of something for, you know, 4 or 5 years under one staff, and then all of a sudden it's kind of switched up on a dime. What was that like for you?
It was interesting. I came in as a freshman, and I didn't play at all, didn't play a snap, got redshirted pretty quickly. I was buried on the depth chart by everybody. And I didn't really, in my own head, think I was going to play early on in my career. So like, I guess I was okay with that. And I wanted to be developed as a football player, and I had never played tight end in high school. I played receiver, I played defense, you know? So playing tight end, especially in the SEC, was a whole different ball game. And then I guess coming in, I learned a lot about the position, and Coach Elder actually left, and Coach Larry Scott came in.
Right.
Yep. And Coach Scott's one of my favorite people ever, like, best coach I've had in my career, one of the best people, just like a great heart, great, loves everybody he coaches them all the same way, coaches them all hard. I just want to give him a shout out personally. But I mean, it was hard, because you come in and you get to know all these guys, you get to know all your guys in your class, all your teammates, and then you get to know all the coaches, and then just, you know, didn't have a great season, underachieved, going 4-8. I mean, we didn't get smacked for the most part. I mean, we lost probably 4 or 5 of those games in the last, I don't know, minute. I mean, I remember Florida threw a Hail Mary on us. One of my first games I ever actually played was my redshirt freshman year against Florida. I caught my first pass there, and they beat us on a Hail Mary, you know, and we lose to Kentucky. We throw a Hail Mary and don't get in the end zone, catch it on the 1 yard line. And so we're driving against South Carolina. They sack us at the end of a game, and it's just, you know, it was a lot of the ball didn't bounce our way that year at all, unfortunately. And football is just like that. But I mean, it was hard. It was hard to have a whole new staff come in, because, you know, they bring their guys and they're trying to find people to replace you. And then you hear it from everybody else. Oh, well, these are Butch Jones guys. Like, these, like, give Pruitt 3 years and none of these guys will even ever be here again. You know, he's getting them all out. So you hear a lot of stuff from everybody. But Pruitt coming in, I mean, I personally loved Pruitt. There were some, I guess, like, every coach they do bad things, you know, whether it be in recruiting or they don't make a great decision here or there or whatever. Like, you can say whatever you want about Pruitt or about Jones or whoever, but for the most part, I mean, he brought in a tough ass mentality. We were going to run it down people's throats and we were going to make them quit. And I think you saw sparks of that, especially during, the season where we went, like, I think it was 9-4 or whatever it was. And we beat Indiana in the bowl game. And we had Alabama, number one team in the country, on the ropes in Tuscaloosa. We didn't start that season so hot, but that tough mentality persevered. And I don't know, like that was Pruitt was one of my favorite people. Pruitt was one of my favorite hires, just because he made SEC football SEC football. You know, like it was hard nosed, it was tough, and it was, we don't care who you are, we're gonna go out there and we're gonna beat you, or we're gonna do everything in our power to beat you. You know, we're not gonna lay down for anybody.
Hey, what was that like though, trying to, with a new staff coming in, and you have high praise of Jeremy Pruitt, and I think everybody around the country knows that he's a good position coach. And I think, and you might agree with this, that, you know, there's a big difference between position coach, you know, a coordinator, or, you know, and a head coach. But, you know, what, in your opinion, you know, that season you were talking about where, you know, you go down there and the craziness at the end of that game against Indiana, you know, where you guys fight back and you win down there in Jacksonville, and you kind of come off that high where, you know, things all didn't go all too smooth, but then it kind of turned around. What was the mindset coming out of that season and heading into the next year, which was going to be crazy and you just didn't know it?
Right. I mean, the mindset coming out of that season was, I mean, we finished season on a high note. You know, we didn't start it on a high note, but we finished on a high note. And everybody around the program, within the program, felt like we were moving in the right direction. But I guess I can't speak for 2020 because I didn't play. I mean, I know you, like everybody can use COVID as an excuse because we weren't there during the summer and blah, 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 you know, all the restrictions and everything. And we had 2 days of spring ball, so you can say whatever you want. But at the end of the day, you still go out there and you got to play, you know, and you got to compete and you got to win and do what you're supposed to do. And we just didn't get it done. I don't know why that is. Everybody likes to blame Pruitt and the coaches. But at the end of the day, you know, players play football, and I can't speak for it because I wasn't out there playing, but we didn't get the job done, unfortunately.
Hey, I want to take a step back for a minute. A lot of people, you know, maybe don't pay close attention to it or don't realize it, but, you know, in your time at Tennessee, you've had setbacks when it comes to your health. And, you know, going back to, you know, that December of 2018, can you walk me through what that was like with that first injury that you sustained at Tennessee and how you processed that?
Yeah, I actually going into, it was Pruitt's first year. We ended up losing to Vandy and did make a bowl game in 18. But from, I guess, the end of July going into camp of that season was when I first herniated a disc in my back. That was like when all this first started happening. So I herniated a disc in my back, played a little bit of fullback that year, did what I could, and then played punch field the rest of the year because I talked to Coach Pruitt and I talked to Chaney and the staff, and I told him, I was like, I just can't play anymore. Like, I physically – like, I remember sitting on the training table, getting my ankles taped, and it's basically just like a bigger chair, and I couldn't even straighten my leg. I had so much nerve pain in my right leg, you know, just, and a lot of people don't understand it if you don't have back pain, because it's not something you can see. But when it came to my performance, I underachieved like an unbelievable amount because I physically couldn't play the game, you know? So I ended up having that surgery, my first surgery, in 2018 in December after we lost to Vandy. And then after that, it was Pruitt's second year spring ball. Came to spring ball feeling really healthy, no back pain, no nerve pain, finally went back to my old self. And that was early 2019, going into 2019 season. Had the 19 summer, 19 season went by, no problems, played, had a pretty good season. Played with Don Wood Anderson, me and him split time, and then obviously beat Indiana in the bowl game. And then going into 2020, I was starting to have like a little bit of hip issues. So COVID hit first, and then we came back, and I was having some hip pain.
So that was just for a time frame wise. So, like, you know, we're talking about January 2020 type area, you know, right after, you know, when the COVID starts coming around, I guess you could say, and everything gets a little crazy. So that's kind of when you started with this hip pain, correct?
Yeah. So I was having some hip pain. You know, you go in, you do some exercises, you start to feel a little bit better, whatever. And then eventually we came back that summer after they sent us home, And, you know, I did some rest and I didn't really feel terrible. And then I, you know, I was working out, doing my own thing because COVID couldn't, we couldn't be at the complex, and came back in the summer. I think it was, I don't remember when it was. It was like late June or early July or something.
Yeah, I think we came back, like early July. Yeah.
Yeah. So came back, started team workouts, doing everything again. And like doing seven on sevens and running and lifting, doing everything you do. And then my hip pain started to get worse. So I got an MRI, and then they said I herniated my second disc. So going into that 2020 season, I guess that summer, the guys below me, like Princeton Fan, Jacob Warren, and everybody else on their roster, really hadn't played a whole lot of football. They played a few snaps here and there, so we didn't have a lot of experience other than myself. So the idea was, especially since they moved the season back due to COVID, to get the surgery right away. And then I would only miss the first or second football game. And then I would play like the back eight or nine, you know. So I would finish my senior year out, be done, have a good season, blah, blah, blah. And try to get a chance to play in the NFL.
So they caught that right away, though.
Caught it right away. Had the MRI during the nighttime after like practice or after a workout or something. Next day, read it and had surgery the day after. So I had the surgery. And that was my second surgery. And then I, you know, started rehab like a week after. Did what I was supposed to. And I think by week six or seven, I ended up. Was out there running routes or whatever with one of our trainers, just trying to get back in the swing of things, trying to get prepared for the season, trying to get my breathing back up, get in shape. And then I ended up re-herniating that same disc. So I guess this would be my third surgery coming up. So I'm out there, I'm running routes, and I herniated the disc again, just terrible pain, terrible nerve pain. Got an MRI that night, said I re-herniated that same disc again, and then had my second surgery, or third overall, but second surgery on that same disc, which obviously put me out for the season. I was down for 10 weeks of literally nothing at all, no bending over, no nothing, like literally couldn't do anything. Like I was pretty much sitting in my house, like no rehab, no running, nothing but walking the dog, you know what I'm saying? And then I what had that, after that.
What did that? Go ahead. I didn't mean to cut you off right there, but you know, you have your third overall surgery, and you missed the 2020 season, which was crazy in itself. Right. What was your mental mindset at that point? I'm curious on how you are handling that. You know, and not trying to rehash bad memories, I guess, but
no, you're good.
How did you fight through that to then, as we're going to talk about later on down the road, you know, get back in that mindset of wanting to play football again?
Honestly, like after I herniated that same disc again, I had to have the second surgery on the same disc, my third overall, I was not in a good place. Like I remember after I left the doctor's office and head trainer Geronimo, he gave me a hug. He was like, dude, I'm sorry. Like, I wish I could make everything better. Like, I was in tears. Like, I remember calling my brother. Like, I was like, dude, my career is over. Like, I can't come back from this. Like, I was mentally unwell. Like, I was not in a good place. But then, you know, I talked over my family and I was like, I can't let this win. You know what I'm saying? Like, I can't let, like, I've been injured my whole career. You know, I've had hamstring, broke a finger, whatever. Came back from the first surgery, and maybe this is just, maybe it's just like another test, you know? So,
I mean, how was the coaching staff through that, like, towards you, I guess? And that's a,
no, they were awesome. I remember going up there talking with Pruitt. I mean, just super in everything. Like, if I need anything, like, whatever it is, you know, like if they need to come bring me food, since I'm sitting home all day, like can't really do anything, like they'll do whatever they can, you know. Coach Chaney was awesome at the time, and like everybody in the staff was awesome. And it wasn't a great time for me initially, because obviously I was depressed, I couldn't play again, you know. I wanted to go out there and I wanted to play in 2020, and I wanted to do my best and get a chance to play in the league and make some money for my family, but it just wasn't in my cards at the time. So I was like, obviously I was super upset, but everybody's really great. And I guess one positive thing you have about, like, when you have a serious injury and you can't play and you can't practice, you get to hang around like more of the staff and more of the, you get to see the ins and outs of how football really works and how it goes day to day. You know, I'd go in there, go down the equipment room and hang out with Hawk and the equipment managers. And we just chill in there, you know, have real conversations about important stuff and have some laughs and really get to know people on a personal level that when you're in the grind of football every day, you know, day to day, you don't really think about anything other than, okay, I got school, got football, do it the next day. You know, got a game on Saturday, do it the next day. You do, it's just week to week. But when you have some time to relax and to think and to be able to talk to other people about whatever, you know, it's kind of, it's nice, you know, you go upstairs and get to hang out with the staff and see a different side of them than just football. So that I would say it was hard, but there were some positives at the same time, you know.
Was there ever, you know, a lot of, I asked this question to a lot of people that are either from the area or they get to go to their dream school or whatever that might be. Was there ever a moment, what was, you know, I don't know how you could pin this down, but where you realized that, okay, I'm playing football at the school that I wanted to, or even the mere fact I'm going to the school and I'm studying to do whatever I want to do in life at the school that I've always wanted to go to. Was there, do you recall moments like that where you maybe kind of pinch yourself and realize, man, you know, this sucks what's going on, but wow, I'm still getting to do this and this outside of football.
Yeah. I mean, you definitely think of it. You have those moments. I mean, like I said earlier, you're mostly in the grind for the most part. You're kind of just doing it day to day. But you have those moments where you just sit back and you think, and you're like, wow, like, I can't believe I'm 20, 21, 22 years old. I'm here. I'm about to get my degree. You know, I have great friends. I'm doing what I've always wanted to do, even though, like, sometimes it sucks and you're running out there and when it's 100 degrees and you don't want to be doing it, but it's almost like you enjoy the grind. And when you get a chance to sit back and realize, like, who, like, guys I've played with and people I've met through being here at Tennessee and playing football here, like, I wouldn't trade that for the world, you know?
No, I can definitely see that. And it shows, you know, at times when you talk about it as well. And also speaking with other people too, let's get to this next part. And I'm going to ask you a question first before we transition to the Heupel era at Tennessee, which would have been your third coach, since you got here. I'm not even just talking about position coaches. I'm talking about head coach
right.
And regimes. I know that, you know, from listening to you, had admiration for Jeremy Pruitt in the way that he wanted to play football in the Ray, that he was trying to run an organization. But is there something where is there a way that you could pinpoint of what went wrong and why it went wrong with Jeremy Pruitt and his staff at Tennessee?
I'm not.
Besides the obvious that's going on right now, you know what I mean? Like, right. Like, that would be right. The easy answer, you know.
Right. Yeah, I'm not sure how to pinpoint it, especially coming off the season we had in 19 against after we beat Indiana and going into 2020. I'm not sure if you can say it, you know, like, obviously the head coach takes the fall for everything because he's the head coach. Like, he's the leader of the organization. But we had really good caliber players. You know, we had 5 stars and 4 stars, whatever else. And we had good role guys and good filler guys and good team guys. But I don't, like, because I said earlier, I didn't play in 2020. Right. So I wasn't around that much. I mean, obviously I was around, but I wasn't in the day-to-day practice and like, just the grind of it. So I can't really say what went wrong. But obviously, I mean, you know, when you have deficiencies at certain positions and the play calling is minimal, you can't, like, if you can't throw the ball, right? Like, let's say, like, your offensive passing scheme, just, it's not working, you know, whether it be the receivers or the O-line can't block or whatever, the running backs can't get in their checkdowns or whatever it is, whatever you have. Like, when you're one dimensional and you have to run the ball 95% of the time, or you, all you can do is throw the ball and you can't run it, I think that really hurts a team's success. I mean, you saw, like, our defense went out there and did everything they could, but the offense was so one-dimensional that we really couldn't get anything going, unfortunately. But I would say that's probably the biggest thing was we were very one dimensional, not so much in play calling, because people like to blame everybody for everything, obviously, but you have to play to your strengths. And there were just like I said earlier, players play ball. And if players aren't playing well, like, you can't blame anybody but the players. Like, if I go out there and I play bad, it's not Coach Pruitt's fault. It's not Heupel's fault. Like, it's not Butch Jones' fault. It's my fault. You know what I'm saying? Like, I wasn't prepared, or I had a bad game, or whatever you have. It's just like, at the end of the day, like, people need to take accountability for themselves and how they play, and need to stop blaming everybody for every little thing. If that makes sense.
No, it does. And one more quick question on that part too, because you were in the meetings, or you've been around, you've been around them. You've been on teams that have gone through this. I don't want you to, we don't have to talk about one certain player last year and what went wrong in 2020 at the end, but how difficult is it for receivers, tight ends, running backs, offensive, whatever it is on offense, when you've got one quarterback, doing another thing, and then it's, okay, let's try to bring in another quarterback. Okay, that quarterback's not working. Let's try to bring in another quarterback. Okay, well, that one's not working, so we'll try to another one. What is that process like, or what's just that mindset like for a positional player like yourself when it's hard to get timing down when you're running through so many different guys? I'm interested in your answer to that.
I think it's extremely hard, especially from the receiving standpoint, because everybody has different relationships with other receivers. Usually the one and two guys get the most reps in practice. And you mesh with those guys, and like, you get your timing down or whatever. But when you're bringing in the second, third, fourth quarterback, and one guy is really good at managing the game, and one guy kind of goes out there and just plays crazy, and he's just going to do whatever he does, like, he's just a ball player. But sometimes it might not be the smartest decision. Sometimes they don't know the offense as well as the other quarterback does. I think it messes with chemistry, and I think it's obviously not healthy for an offense when you have multiple quarterbacks playing. Right. So, like, I think the consistency of that position is one of the most, if not the most important, important factor in having a successful offense. Like, you can get a guy with a massive arm, but if he's going to throw an interception every 10 passes, it doesn't matter. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I could, I appreciate the honest answer on that, because it, I think everybody saw last year, it was just a rotation. That's really what
it was. Yeah, it's hard to play with guys that you're not comfortable with. Like, I didn't play last year. But I played when Quentin Dormady was playing quarterback, and exactly. then Jarrett came in as the young buck and played quarterback. And I mean, you got guys switching out left and right, and then there's some drama, and so-and-so is going to transfer because he's unhappy. And it's kind of just a big cluster. And I think that really hurt us not having a stable quarterback position, a stable quarterback room. Especially offensively speaking.
So let's get into, the season comes to an end last year, and you have to make a decision about coming back for the technically 21 season. And, it is, and also let's phrase this too, Tennessee's going through another coaching transition. So, January, December, the word gets out about the investigation. Okay, so there's some unsettledness inside the program. And then you get right to January, and you're switching out coaches. So I'm interested how that affected you for a player that, you had already graduated. You graduated in December of 2020. So
correct.
You had your degree. So what was your mindset, and what went into you returning to play for another season and wanting to give it a go under – a different regime, which would have been your third one
after three back surgeries too. Some call me crazy. I don't know. I remember watching us play against, I think it was Florida. What was our last game? I think it was either Florida or A&M. It was senior day. Yeah. And I remember walking out there, and I was really upset about how everything was going, number one, because of the season. Like, obviously, I hate to lose. And especially if I felt like I was letting my team down because I couldn't be out there to make a difference, you know, whether it be blocking or receiving or whatever they wanted me to do. I felt like I could have helped in some way. So I felt like I kind of abandoned those guys on my team, even though I didn't, like, I couldn't physically play.
Right.
But I wanted to give it another go because I didn't want to, like, I wanted to end my career on my own terms. I didn't want to let the back surgeries win. I didn't want to let the injuries win. Just because, like, I felt like I could overcome them because I have before, like in 19, after I had that surgery at the end of 18, I had a good season. And I eventually, the end goal was to have a good season, go play in the NFL and make some money for a little bit and try to change my family's life, like most people's goals are. So I wanted to give it another go. I felt like obviously I'm still young and I feel like I'm pretty talented and I've played against guys that play in the league and I've done my job, whether it be receiving or run blocking or pass blocking, do whatever's asked, playing on special teams. I feel like I could carve a role into making it to the next level. And I just needed one more year. You know, I need one more successful year of being healthy. So I think that was my main reason for coming back. And I didn't want to leave Tennessee the way I did at all. I just didn't want to. I didn't feel like I ended my career the way I wanted to.
Was there any hesitation though, Austin, because of the way things went with your back the previous, you know, that?
Oh, 100%.
Six months before you make the decision to return to Tennessee for another year, you go through two surgeries and, you know, kind of sounds like things were a little rushed per se when it comes to the first time, when the first surgery happened and then right. You know, things getting back on the field. So was there, you know, hesitation when it comes to your back? And I don't want to say trust in the doctors, okay, because I'm not going down that road, but I'm saying right. Just how things have gone to that point and then having to make a decision to come back in this completely different offense.
Yeah, there was a lot of hesitation. I mean, even leading up to this spring, like I remember talking to Coach Hype. I was like, to be honest, like everybody says I'm really healthy, but it's hard when you don't, like, coming into this spring. I've done very minimal legs. You know, I've, like, that was what the summers for, was to really build my legs back. Cause, you know, when you have back surgery, you can't squat, like do some front squat and stuff. But it's not like, you got to be very careful in everything you do because you don't want to load my back up too much. So I told Hype coming in the spring, I was like, I don't know if I'm going to be able to play. Like everybody says I'm going to be able to play, but I don't know if I'm going to be able to play to my full potential. And I told him ahead of time, I said, if I can't, then I'm going to medically retire because I don't want to go out there and, number one, embarrass myself, my family, or this football team, because, like, it just doesn't make any sense, you know? So I told him that and then went out there in the spring and felt really good, felt really healthy. Finally started to feel like myself again, like I did in the 2019 season. And I was like, let's go, man. Like, this season's coming up. I mean, I'm probably going to get a lot more receptions this year because of the way we run the offense. And I was extremely excited.
What was it? Okay. So I'm going to go back, just take a step back before spring. I imagine it's tough for a senior like yourself having to buy in to a new system again in a new regime and a new coaching staff and, you know, position coaches and whatnot. What was your impressions on Josh Heupel in the winter, you know, when he took the job and even going, you know, through spring practice? You know, we'll stop right here, you know, at the spring practice part, but, you know, what was your impressions when he first took the job and what he was trying to do to, you know, they say this all around the country, change the culture, you know, within a school. But, you know, what was your opinion on that?
I guess it's harder for older guys to buy in, right? Because I couldn't tell you how many position coaches. I've had three new head coaches and a million different offensive coordinators and everybody and a bunch of position coaches. Hey man, we're going to feed the tight end the ball. You're going to be an intricate part of the offense. We're going to put points on the board. Like I've heard it my whole career, you know, and some points we did and some points we didn't, unfortunately. But it's harder for an older guy to buy in because at this point, like I'm thinking in my own head, man, I got 1 year left. Like I'm trying to catch the ball, trying to block my butt off and do everything I can to play the best of my ability. And I'm trying to get out of here just because like everybody on the team is a young guy pretty much. You know what I'm saying? Like, I'm one of the oldest guys on the team now. I think me and Jaquan Blakely are the only guys left from that Butch Jones era. Everybody else is from different coaching staffs and different recruits. And I mean, it just happens as coaches get let go. But it's definitely hard to buy in when you're an older guy. But I mean, I think Heupel is going to be, I guess, I don't want to, you know, predetermine people's success, but I mean, I think what he has going on is, I mean, I think he's going to have success, and the offense is definitely something new for the league. They take a lot of their stuff from when Drew Locke was at Missouri. I watched a lot of film of that, and play up tempo, you know, going to try and gas teams and make teams make mistakes and throw the ball around a lot more than what we used to. But Coach Heupel's an awesome guy too. He's definitely a player's coach. I mean, I'm talking about daps up every player, regardless of scholarship, walk on, comes in the locker room, talks to us, hangs out with us, talks to the leadership group on what they want to do, you know, what they think is best for the team, and actually listens instead of just doing whatever he wants because he's the head man. And is probably the most receptive coach I've had, coming from a player standpoint of just really wants us to be happy and wants the best for us, no matter what it is. If we want to wear white cleats, he's going to make it happen. Like, if we want different soap in the bathroom, like, he's going to make it happen because he thinks that whatever we think is important to him. So I definitely, I mean, I know the guys love him. I love him. He's been awesome through this whole process. But I mean, I definitely think he's going to have success here in his new regime. It'll just be dependent on if people buy in and if people, go out there. And like I said, players play football, coaches don't. So no matter how many great passes or a great route concepts are put up or put on the field, it's not going to matter if players don't make plays, you know?
No, and I agree. It's all about what the players do and how they respond to it. From your standpoint, how was winter and how was spring from a mental health standpoint? There's a lot of talk, you know, nowadays, and there should be a lot of talk about mental health, and doesn't matter if you're a regular Joe or an athlete or whatnot, but you know, you coming back from surgery and when they say giving their all for Tennessee, like, you know, you're an example. You know, we're talking three surgeries now. At this point, and you know, we're not even talking about the head coaching changes and the staff changes, but you know, getting to those winter workouts for you and then getting to the spring and then right after, you know, the spring and you know, all the install that they do, from a mental standpoint, how are you able to take it? And I don't want you to speak for teammates, but how do you think, you know, in your opinion, did the teammates, you know, take the new staff and the new offense and new defense and whatnot?
Well, number one, I appreciate you saying that. Like, in 2019, after the season, we had our banquet, and I mean, I didn't expect to win an award. You know, I didn't go out there and catch a million passes for touchdowns, but I actually won the My All Award. And that award was probably the most meaningful award I've had in my career, whether it be MVPs, you know, when you're in high school, middle school, whatever, or all state or regional, whatever you have. That really meant the most to me, because that meant every day that I went out there and grinded, every day I went out there and I beat my head against another guy on defense, and I'm blocking guys that are way bigger than me, and I'm doing everything I'm asked of. Like, it mattered, you know, my teammates appreciated that. So I appreciate you saying that. But when it comes to a mental health standpoint, especially with the new offense, I mean, you got to think, this is my, I don't know what offense I'm learning now, but everything's different from the play calling, from the play calls from the sideline coming in. Like, you have signals and there's numbers and there's different schemes and there's different alignments. And I'm not going to lie, when they first came in, I had a hard time learning, because it's very polar opposite of what I've ever been taught because of how fast they play, you know? So I had a hard time learning initially. I mean, some of the younger guys picked it up before I did, so I really had to study hard. So it was kind of frustrating at first, but I mean, eventually got it down. And I mean, we're out there in spring ball and they're flying around, you know, signals are coming in left and right. And the defense is gassed. They get their hands on their knees. They're trying to rotate during the scrimmages and they can't even get guys in because we're out there moving the ball so fast. But from a mental health standpoint, I mean, it wasn't terrible. I mean, they definitely made it as easy as they could. Obviously it's a grind. But the staff's done a great job of making life a lot easier, especially just getting away from football, you know, going to main event or going to do whatever, going to the pool and doing community service stuff and just being able to be with your teammates and be away from football, I think is extremely helpful from the mental health standpoint. And they definitely, Coach Heupel for sure understands that.
So let's get into after spring. And so you guys had a break, you know, a little bit of a break after spring. You were a lot of players able to go home. For you, home is here.
Right.
You know, you were able to step away from football just for a little bit after the craziness of, you know, last year, your injury and new coaches and new offense and whatnot. You get a little break and you come back and, you know, you start working out, you know, right around that, what, it was early July point, I guess you guys returned. I'm sorry. Well, it was that June portion, but then you guys, mm-hmm. you know, start working it even more, getting in the weight room and figuring things out. And July, you know, it's kind of a month where you don't want to get hurt. You know, you want to do everything you can to stay healthy, but get bigger and faster.
Right.
But unfortunately, you had a setback. This month. Can you kind of walk me through that and what all happened and you know, just your mental mindset of where it was?
Yeah. So coming up after spring, you know, had a little break, went home, did a little relaxing, got back into working out again. And then really been feeling like myself again, you know, felt really healthy. Been got my weight up close to 250, felt really good. Just really felt like my old self again. And then we came back, been lifting, you know, getting in the grind of 7-on-7s and meetings again, everything. And then coming up on, I think 4 weeks ago, 3.5-4 weeks ago coming up, we were just in the weight room and we were doing some hang cleans, and threw up my rep and dropped the weight, did it, whatever, just didn't feel great afterwards. And then my back actually locked up on me, like I was hunched over. For about like 3 days after. So I took some anti-inflammatories, just felt like, you know, saw the chiropractor, felt kind of off, but they wanted to MRI it anyways, just to be, you know, just to be sure that it wasn't anything serious, just because my previous history. And then after literally probably 3 days after I started taking my anti-inflammatories for my back to kind of locking up on me, I started to have some nerve pain. Like my back actually released, I straightened up again, everything was great, but then I was having some nerve pain. I was like, oh my gosh, not again. Because, you know, in my head, like I know where nerve pain leads.
Right. Yeah.
And unfortunately I got my MRI and they said that I herniated another disc at a different level.
So this was on the other side of the back. I mean, it was,
So this is on my left side. Everything else has previously been right side, but this is my left side.
So you herniated another disc, but this time opposite side of your back to your previous three surgeries.
Correct.
So, you know, walk me through that with the doctors and having that discussion, you know, before you meet with Heupel and whatnot, you know, what were discussions on, okay, you know, how do we attack this? Is this what it is? You know, does there a second opinion needed? You know, I know it's probably difficult, but what were those 3 or 4 days like, you know, after receiving the MRI news?
Yeah, I had, like I said, I had that MRI and then came in the next day. And then like whenever you have the MRI, doc reads it to you the next day. So I went in there with Geronimo, he read it to me. Obviously wasn't the news I was hoping for. And to just be straight up with you, man to man, like I broke down crying because I knew what that meant, you know?
Yeah.
I was super upset. Like a lot of things in life, like you don't understand. And this is just one of those things, unfortunately.
yeah.
But I had that conversation with Doc And he was like, listen, there's a couple of things we can do here. And I was like, well, let's exhaust every option we can before having surgery. Because having back surgery in general is rough, but having four of them is a lot worse, you know? So, I initially had an epidural done. And then that was what it was. I mean, I've had them done in the past before. I've had multiple, and he said, you know, you can get some relief from this, but it's not really going to fix anything. So I had the epidural done, didn't feel any relief whatsoever. Didn't really expect to, honestly. And then next step was taking an oral steroid by mouth after the epidural. So then took that for however many days it was, 6-7 days. And during this whole process, I'm not doing anything. I'm not lifting. I'm not running, you know, just trying to let everything calm down. So took the oral steroid, and even with not doing anything at all, you know, just really barely any relief, unless I'm just like sitting down, you know, walking my dog, I'm hurting every day. I'm hurting waking up. I'm hurting going to bed. If I sit too long, if I stand too long, there's kind of just like no comfort point in between it all, in between all this. And then just went in and talked to him, and, I'm supposed to go meet my surgeon here on Tuesday, I believe. And I already know the conversation that's going to be had. I've talked with my family, and I talked with Heupel and Dr. Klink and everybody and Geronimo. And they think it's in my best interest as well as I do. And I've had second and third opinions outside of the football program that it's time for me to unfortunately medically retire. Because I having a fourth back surgery, I don't remember the percentage that I was told, but if I continue to play after the fourth back surgery, there's a very high percentage chance that I'm going to have another surgery in a year and a half, 2 years from now at a different level in my back of disc, you know? Hmm. I mean, obviously it's unfortunate and I didn't want to end my career this way. But I mean, I learned at an early age that everything doesn't always go your way and life happens and you just kind of deal with it as you go. But that's just kind of where I am right now, unfortunately.
Austin, what was the, I'm interested in what the conversations were. And we've talked privately about this before, but I think you're open to talking about this part. What were the conversations like with Josh Heupel when it comes to, you know, you got to go talk to him now about retiring from the game of football, a game that you love. But you also, you know, you have to worry about, okay, you know, still being eligible per se, you know, as a part of the football program, at Tennessee for 21. What was the staff and what was that conversation like when it comes to them doing everything and anything they can to help you in your situation going forward?
Yeah, I went and talked to Coach Heupel, went up to his office, and I mean, just sat down and just had a pretty casual conversation with him. Just told him all what Doc said and what I'm kind of going to be doing moving forward. I mean, he completely understands. I mean, obviously, he said like he hurts for me because being in rehab and coming off so many injuries for that long, and then finally getting a chance to be healthy again, and then not being able to get that chance, obviously it sucks. But he was really receptive and said, like, literally, he told me, you've been here for five, coming up on, I think it's 6 years. That's unbelievable to say. But he said, you've been here for this long. He told me, like you said, he said, you've given your body and your all for this university and this football program. Like, you have nothing to worry about when it comes to scholarship or being eligible. Like, obviously you graduated, but like, we're going to take care of you with like whatever you need, surgery, rehab, like anything you need. He said, you can call me, you can text me. And this is why I love Coach Heupel so much. He's a really personable guy. He was like, listen, I don't just want this to be a for now thing. He said, I want to be there, like, down the road. I want you to call me when you get married. Like, I want to be actually a part of your life. You know, I want to be a part of your life events. And I think that goes a long way, especially coming from a guy that's had three different coaching staffs. And I feel like he's definitely, definitely the right guy for Tennessee right now.
Did that surprise you, Austin? Did that, and I mean that in a way of, you know, all head coaches are going to try to say the right thing, But
yeah, I think it matters when it comes to
right.
I think it matters when it comes to like being behind closed doors. Coaches can say whatever they want on Twitter to the media, but he didn't have to say that to me. He didn't have to be extremely nice to me. I mean, obviously, like we need certain. I mean, we could build depth at more positions. He could take my scholarship right now and give it to somebody else. You know, like I don't need to be on scholarship for any reason other than the fact that he still wants me to be around and he still cares about me, you know? And I haven't even known the guy that long. And I mean, I haven't really done anything to prove that I was worthy of that. You know, I mean, I was here with him for a spring. But I think him saying things like that goes a long way and really shows the type of guy he is, the type of character he has.
So you know, this is a medical retirement now for you, Austin, and you know, you're going to be coming up on your fourth back surgery, while technically a University of Tennessee athlete. And, I mean, when you look back on your playing career, and I know this is very, very tough for you, but when you look back on your playing career at Tennessee, are just moments that you were a part of, you know, are there a few that stand out to you, whether that be games, whether that be moments in games, or, you know, because you're a part of some pretty wild experiences at Tennessee, or are there some that stand out more so than others?
Oh yeah, definitely. I mean, first and foremost, like just being here at Tennessee, you know, living out my dream of playing here,
yeah,
is a dream itself. You know, just being in between the white lines, like being out there and playing football against guys that you never thought you'd play against. I mean, coming from like Sevier County, there's not a lot of guys that come out of here and play on Saturdays, especially in the SEC, you know? Okay. So that's definitely just something like I'll never forget. I mean, I've played in 30 something games. I mean, I've started in a few of them. I've played against and with some really great players. So I'll never forget any of that. And, you know, just the fans are crazy and just the game day atmosphere, the ball walk, everything in between. Like I'll never forget any of that, but I would have to say like the guys, like my teammates, there's something about being part of a team. And I didn't ever think like this coming out of high school, cause I was, you know, I knew it all. And I was kind of self-centered coming out of high school because I was playing in the SEC. Right. That got humbled real quick, but there's something about being a part of a team and doing your job to make this team successful. Like I talk to people sometimes and they're like, man, what's your favorite part about playing in Tennessee? And I just tell them, it's pretty simple. Like whenever, let's just say, let's go back to Eric Gray's like 95 yard run against Vandy, right? Like this is just one example of many. There's something special about when you get everybody on your team or everybody that's on the field doing their job for the team success, not for their individual success. You know, like when Eric Gray's running down the field 95 yards and everybody's going nuts, and then we get over the sideline and everybody's smiling and laughing, having a great time, like going crazy, just having a ball. Like that's the best time. That's the best thing about playing football. Number one is just the team aspect, which I don't think you really get in that many more sports, just because it's, like I said, it's just a grind. And like when you have success and when things are going right, and like that's when you build those memories, you know, like that play specifically, I'll never forget. We're out there. I mean, it's raining. Like nobody really wanted to play against Vandy anyways, because we knew we were going to dog them. And we go out there and we're like on the minus 5 yard line.
Oh yeah. It was bad. Yeah.
Yeah. It was cold. Like nobody wanted to be there, whatever. And we were already beating them pretty decent. I remember I looked at Eric. I was like, Eric, listen, bro, I'll give you $100 right now if you just crib this, if you go score so we can get off the field and so we can put the backups in and wrap this up, you know, and go sit on like the heated benches on the sideline. Yeah. And he was like, okay, bro, let's do it. So we're like in the huddle. He called, JG called the play or whatever. And Eric takes off like 95 yards. I'm like, I didn't even run down the field. I'm looking back at the Jumbotron, like on the backside of the play, I had like a backside cutoff, whatever, the C gap. And I'm looking back at the Jumbotron. I'm like, no way, this guy just took it 95. And I was I was kind of hoping he got tackled just so I wouldn't have to give him $100. But no, he didn't. No, so that's just like one funny memory. But he never let me even live it down. We got to the bowl game down there in Florida and I don't even remember where we were in Florida.
Yeah.
So we got down there and he was like, "Hey man, like you still owe me my $100." Because we got our bowl money and everything. So I gave him his $100 or whatever. But just memories like that, man. Just like, I'll never forget things like that, and my teammates and the guys that I do it for, and the guys that I played alongside and played with. It was never about me. It was never about anything other than going out and playing for each other and playing for the success. It wasn't about the fans. It wasn't about the coaches. It wasn't even about the record. It was about those guys in that locker room. And like I've made a million lifelong friends that I'll never forget my friendships with, guys that'll be at my wedding. So I would say just my teammates, man, the guys I do it for, those are the best memories I've had at Tennessee and the things I'll never forget.
Last two questions. If there's something you would tell Tennessee fans, I wanted to do this tonight in this form because I find that sometimes it's better to express yourself through your voice than just have something written down. And I think you would agree with me, and that's kind of why we did this thing, this evening. But if there was something you could tell Tennessee fans about your experience and everything that you've been through at Tennessee, and, yes, you get to play college football, and yes, you're on scholarship and whatnot, but it's also, in your mind and talking to you, sounds like a real privilege to wear that Tennessee helmet and to be able to represent the university. You're not a kid that ever got in trouble. You're never causing problems, in a sense of headlines or anything along those lines per se. But what would you say to Tennessee fans for their support over the last 4.5-5 years and the support that you'll get over the next the rest of your career? Everybody's going to remember Austin Pope.
That's the goal. But no, I appreciate the fan support. Even, when we've been down, when I haven't had the greatest games, everybody's a Twitter legend in their own mind behind the keyboard, and everybody's tweeting at you, whatever. And I haven't experienced that on a crazy level, like some of our past players have, you see it on social media, and there's always some just fans that don't get it. But for the most part, like, I appreciate the fans that have reached out to me, to the people that have followed my career. It's been really meaningful to me to play here. Like you said, like, it's been a privilege to put that power tee on and go out there and represent the university, my teammates, my family, and this fan base. And we've seen some highs and we've seen some lows, but I just really appreciate everything, whether it be the kind words or whatever it may be, or it has been, or whatever it is in the future. I appreciate those people, no matter what age. I've talked to kids that look up to me. I've talked to people my age that look up to me, not because of anything special I've done, but because of the role that I put myself in. And I really want to say thank you, and I appreciate all those people.
Last question for you, buddy, and I really appreciate you sitting down and wanted to do this. You've always been, really great with the media here in town. And I think that's something we appreciate because, sometimes guys just don't want to talk, and that's understandable. You get that, but, you've been good in a sense of, being able to represent the school, on a national level, any opportunities that came about for availabilities, and you would know all about it. Sometimes either, if it was either Zach Stipe or Bill Martin want to come to you, maybe you didn't want to talk at that moment, right? or you weren't around, but you ended up doing it. And, when you look back 20 years from now and you try to tell somebody, about that time at Tennessee and about your career at Tennessee and what all, you've accomplished, just getting your degree and being able to go forth, what will you tell yourself? What will you tell yourself in 20 years about your experience, or tell somebody else about your experience in Knoxville?
Oh man, that's a heck of a question.
I got you.
I don't know, man. I'll probably tell them about everything, about from going from going, coming in my freshman year and not playing and going through the grind, knowing I wasn't going to play, you know, to eventually working my way on the field, to getting hurt, to coming back and playing again, and making my team better and being a good teammate and being a good football player. But overall, my experience from, you know, everybody, the Thornton Center that helps with academics, all these, when you get older, I guess, like a lot, like I didn't realize when I was younger, all these people are here to help you. All these people dedicate, I mean, I know it's their job, but they literally dedicate their lives to help you. And you don't see it like that when you're younger. But I'll probably just, I don't know. And I appreciate those people, but I'll just look back and tell my kids or whoever I'm talking to about my time at Tennessee, about all the good memories I've had, about whether it be plays or specific things or, you know, locker room moments or good laughs we had, you know, going out as a college kid, having a good time with your boys and your bros, just really being in the moment and, you know, kind of just being there for each other and having a good bond with your teammates, I think is probably what I'll reflect on and talk about the most.
Austin Pope, tight end, University of Tennessee, buddy. I appreciate you. I know this wasn't the easiest thing for you, and this hasn't been the easiest time for you. Heck, in the last 5 years, but especially over the past 3.5 weeks, I wish you the best of luck, buddy. I appreciate you coming on. I appreciate you wanting to tell your story, and I wish you nothing but the best going forward, brother.
Yes, sir. I appreciate it. Thank you for letting me come on and do this.
Thank you, Austin. That's Austin Pope, tight end, University of Tennessee, medically retiring, but getting to tell his story on the way out. This is an RTI digital production. We'll talk to you next week.